This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 102.7 in Gauteng and Fine Music Radio in Cape Town.
As I scroll across my screen, it's quite clear that stocks have started the new week on the front foot globally as we see hopes of more cowbell, more stimulus from central banks around the world and steps being taken by major economies. The likes of Germany and China appear to have soothed investors' fears of a sharp global economic slump. The MSCI World Equity Index, which follows shares in some 47 countries, was up 0.5% today, powered by a 1% gain for the Pan-European Stock 600. If you look at bourses in London, Frankfurt and Paris, all registering gains of just over 1%. And we kicked off with a 1% gain on the JSE 2. And the optimism has spread to Wall Street, where stocks are up over 1%. Liston Mainchies, independent financial consultant, is here with your view from the market. Liston, nice to see so much green on the screen for a change.
Well, yes, Michael, good evening to you and to the listeners.
What do you think is driving sentiment now? Just this, if you look at it, these measures to fend off a global recession appear to have soothed investor nerves somewhat.
Well, sorry, I have to laugh a little bit. You know, if soothing nerves gets markets up, that's not exactly the market I want to be in. I'd rather they had a tailwind and things were going in their favor. And as you know, there's certainly plenty of alternatives to that with headwinds all over the place.
We see it. More than a third of central banks have eased in the past 6 months. That's the most abrupt shift since 2009, according to Fitch. That's a report out in the FT. But the award for most entertaining story of the day goes to the New Yorker for me. And the article quotes an unnamed former U.S. official saying that Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is among the most sycophantic and obsequious people around Trump. He's like a heat-seeking missile, for Trump's, well, I can't quite mention it, his posterior.
Well, again, you have to be well aware after all this time that virtually the only people left around Trump, all those who have taken any different view, have been parted company with. So, yes, I would agree that in general, that is exactly why everything that Donald says, there's a supporter for.
And I was watching Pompeo on David Rubenstein on Bloomberg recently. He was quizzed about whether or not he would perhaps make a bid for the highest office. And he, in a roundabout way, said, absolutely. So we know exactly what game he's playing. He's playing politics over in the U.S. Speaking of the U.S., going well versus falling apart, you sent me a very interesting story about housing starts down 4% in July. That's always a very interesting indicator for me on the health of the U.S. economy.
Yes, it is. And again, you know, there's a lot of work involved, moving lumber around, you know, organizing the buildings, in getting the copper in, which is one of the other reasons that Dr. Copper generally works, telling you, you know, if there's activity, you know, copper will be the first to notice it. So again, it is of note, but I say, you know, one swallow doesn't make a summer. We just want to see that it carries on that way. And there's no doubt that's what lower interest rates are about. And if your other article that you would have seen is that the refinancing is on the go all over again.
Yeah.
Because people who missed out on the last refinancing, you know, prices or interest rates rose a bit and they regretted it. Now they've got the chance to do it again. And again, you know, when you get enough borrowing down at 1, 2 and 3%, how on earth do you move rates up to 4 and 5 without causing a calamity?
And that is
Painting yourself into the corner brigade.
That is the bind that central banks find themselves in at the moment.
Well, except ours.
Except ours, clearly. There might be some scope for a further rate cut if, as Capital Economics reckons, we see inflation come in this week at 4%. The consensus is around 4.5%. So bang on in that midway point for our central bank governor. What are your thoughts on inflation? I know for anyone who is following the CPI rate, whenever they see the CPI number come out, it certainly doesn't reflect my personal inflation basket. I don't know about yours.
No, well, again, I think if you have a close look at the components of our index, by far the biggest is housing. And you can't exactly get a measure of housing cost. It isn't related to the building cost. It isn't related. It's related to a number of items, but the most of which is an imputed cost of owning your own home. So whatever that might be. And you and I know owning your own home is an exercise in spending.
How long is a piece of string? You know, whenever anyone asks me whether or not property is a good investment, I tend to point them to REIT land rather than owning your own home because of those costs. But even that has been a space that has experienced quite a lot of pain. I see Resilient, one of the top performing shares on the JSE today, up 4.8%. Some of the other big movers, nothing to really write home about, Liston, apart from Sasol in fourth place here, up 3.3%. And there was a news story broken by Bloomberg very late in the day today that Sasol has met with some of its larger institutional shareholders. I didn't see any announcement on SENS, though, which is curious.
But again, I find some of that, you're the first to report it to me. But if that happened in Australia, I think there would be a court case. You may only do that kind of meeting after a market closes, because you can't have one a player or participant more informed than another. So you could have the meeting, have all the questions, but they couldn't press any buttons, triggers, or cell phones. This sounds very, very surprising to me, and I won't be at all surprised to see some kind of inquiry. Maybe they were all sworn to secrecy and promised not to divulge the content. I really don't know. 4 o'clock is also a strange item. But the big story in any case was the amazing fall that we had last week. It really was. I think we got down to something like 243 at around about lunchtime on Friday.
Yep.
Closed a lot better than that. And then, as you say, another 3% up today. But that's not inspiring anybody. I think I sat in this chair last week and we discussed why Sasol was not in the top 10. And at around about 290, there probably weren't too many sellers left. Golly, then comes another announcement later in the week. Well, and there were sellers.
It was on the back of an announcement, though, before that we hadn't had too much new news, so to speak. There's been a lot of talk in the market about whether or not Sasol is going to have to come to market with another capital raise. Do you suspect that that is now firmly on the table at these levels?
No, I don't think so. They definitely seem to have had their borrowings in place and over longish periods and for a new project anyway. You know, so it's when you've got borrowings against an existing business and for whatever reason one or other of your major customers leaves, you know, then you have a big problem because you have the debt and not a real way to service it. So I definitely don't think that story is on the cards, unless they now wish, for whatever reason, you know, to buy something, then they would have to have a rights issue to buy it with.
The one issue for Sasol is the lack of trust and confidence now in this management team. For several years, they've been over time and over budget on a very large capital project here. What are management going to have to do to try and regain the market's trust here?
Well, the biggest point, and all the time, you know, and we've seen it on many projects, whether locally or whether internationally, they are always, you know, a bit later and cost a bit more. So I've always allowed for that in my evaluation, and I'm surprised that not many analysts did that. The problem now seems to be the reporting. Now they're saying there is a glitch in the reporting and we're going to have to delay our accounts. Well, that sounds a lot worse than just being over budget and a bit over time.
Yeah, and we'll have to wait and see what that independent audit picks up. Liston, wait right there. Kitleho has the latest traffic.
This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027 in Gauteng and Fine Music Radio in Cape Town.
Welcome back with your view from the market is Liston Mankies. Liston, offshore investors sold a net 3 billion rands worth of South African stocks last week, 9.7 billion rands in bonds. That's according to data that we've seen from the JSE today. So this dumping of South African assets continues. What might stem the bleeding at this stage?
Well, again, we've said it before, headlines must change. And just the fact that, you know, you're not hearing another bad report isn't enough. You have to get one or two good reports saying this has been dealt with, that has been handled, and this is what we found. But I guess we're still in that, call it process, And I almost call it the Truth and Reconciliation Committee in disguise, where a whole lot of facts that we basically knew are being brought out again and again, and various luminaries are about to judge upon those facts now.
It doesn't help when you see in the Sunday papers that the ANC is looking at the possibility of using private and public pension funds to rescue state-owned enterprises. And I'm talking about an interview in the Sunday Times with Enoch Godongwada, who's head of the party's Economic Transformation Subcommittee. And he said that the asset management industry currently has this pot of 6 trillion rands under management, which should be borrowed by government rather than going to the IMF.
Well, again, about 3 or 4 points in that one. We have had prescribed assets before. They did all sorts of damage to our economy. They did some good as well. By and large, they were used to build Richards Bay as a harbour, the Saldanha-Sichuan rail line. We'd undertaken to build them, and we had no money to build them with. So somebody had to come up with the money. And so basically, you know, when times are desperate, then it's certainly possible to go to the funds that say, but if we were building a future with it, it wouldn't be too bad. Repairing a past may be the answer, but just bailing out in something that may not even, see the year 2025 is not a good deal for me or the pensioners. You know, one day those folk are going to need some money, and if it isn't there. So, again, it's got to be told and it's got to be sold. But, again, I'm not a big fan of Enoch and Godwana, as I've mentioned to you before. He was in charge of a company. He was chairman at the time. And they lost 450 million of pension money. It was actually the PEP Stores Provident Fund.
Trilinear.
And I've never seen the outcome of that inquiry.
Conveniently swept under the carpet. Have we heard that before? I come back to the idea of using prescribed assets, especially to bail out state-owned enterprises. And what I despise about the idea is it gives a blank check. You don't have the pressures to reform what are clearly broken state-owned enterprises if you just say, well, we have 6 trillion rands worth of pension funds assets to continually bail out state-owned enterprises that need structural reform.
Well, again, it's how you do the bailout, and if it is that the government issues stock to the pension funds, then it is a debt on the government's books, and the ratings agencies would see it. And I still think it doesn't matter how you wash it, that's how they will see it. Mm-hmm. They will say you've just done a transfer of debt.
Even if it's a debt to equity swap, as is being considered with the PIC and the Eskom debt. Speaking of debts, the very interesting trading update today out of Blue Label shows that Cell C continues to struggle. Blue Label is going to be delaying the publication of its full-year financial results until late September to deal with what it said of various issues related to Cell C's recapitalization. Not looking good for the Levy brothers.
No. I thought you were going to talk about the debt bill.
The debt bill is massive. Let's have a look at what options are on the table. If you look at what Craigie Stevenson, who's the new CEO of Cell C, said, he said in this open letter that was published to stakeholders last month that the company had appointed the law firm Bowmans to investigate parts of the business where they suspect there may be irregular business practices. They've also hired PwC to do a full procurement audit and review of their processes. So beyond just debt, it seems like another case of potential corporate fraud as well.
Sounds like it.
Well, it certainly doesn't make for very good reading if you are a long-suffering Blue Label shareholder. I know you love following the Boeing story, Liston, so let's talk about what's happened with Boeing and how the four-second catastrophe has doomed the 737 MAX. Something in the design here that has led to a fatal flaw.
Yeah, well, it reminded me of the movie, and I can't remember its name, but of the fellow who was had forced to ditch his plane into the Hudson. And, basically all the evidence showed that he was dilatory in his actions, except he had to have more than the time they allowed for to make them appraise the situation and take the action. And it seems the same thing has happened here. They assumed that all pilots were sufficiently well skilled that they would make the correct decision within 4 seconds.
Within four seconds.
It probably was not the case in at least two instances.
I don't know how, if you're going through the jumble of contradictory warnings, that you can take any course of action within 4 seconds when it comes to dealing with a potential catastrophe.
But I just think if your plane is going up too steeply, you ought to be aware of it as a pilot.
Oh, well, that's certainly not what markets are doing at the moment, although we did have a nice steep start to the week. Liston Mainshi is an independent financial consultant with your view from the markets.